SM presents The Tim Meisberg Show, streaming live on WBSM.com and the WBSM app. Call 508-996-0500. Send us app chat messages and open line voicemails using the WBSM app. Now, The Tim Meisberg Show.
And welcome back in hour number three of the program here on Thursday morning. And we have a guest now joining us in the studio to talk about a very important issue and to really put a human side on a topic that gets talked about a lot, but gets talked about in abstract terms and not in human terms. So joining us, we have Danielle Brown. She leads a team of outreach workers that serve people living without shelter in New Bedford. And she was the recent recipient of the New Bedford Human Rights Commission's award. And she joins us now to share her story and talk about the work that she does. Good morning, Danielle. How are you?
Good morning, Tim. Thank you for having me on your show.
And we were talking during the news there about the fact that the humanity of people that are homeless, that are unsheltered, that have no place, that is what is lost on a lot of folks that see this from the outside. They see them more as a situation than as a person.
That is true. Many individuals within our community, often one of the things I hear or I read on social media a lot, because I do follow but I don't comment, is that, you know, that's just another immigrant, that's just another person who's an addict. You know, there's so many stigmas, but they're just another human being who's bad out on their luck, right? I will say that working with the population that I work, the individuals that I work with, they are unhoused individuals who just got a stroke of bad luck. You know, many of the individuals that I currently work with in our housing crisis don't have a substance use disorder. They're individuals where the landlords came in and have raised the rent, and you now have a family out on the streets, or a failed marriage, or a loss of a loved one, so the family income size has changed, that, you know, and so forth. So yeah, it's a lot of stigma out there, and I believe in, you know, having equal access and an inclusion for everybody. And it's important just to stop and say hello to the person and get to know their story instead of judging.
And one of the things that I remember learning about the unsheltered population in Wareham that I used to, you know, deal with on a regular basis, because I lived and worked in the town. So one of the stories that I heard from someone was, well, this person is the way they are because they have an addiction issue. And I happened to get to know the person a little bit just from seeing them around and having conversations like you're saying. And I said, you know, how do you feel about the fact that that's what everybody thinks about you, is that you're just an addict? And they told me, they said, I wasn't an addict until I didn't have a place to live. And I became an alcoholic because drinking was cheap and it kept me warm. Mm-hmm. And then that led to substance abuse because I just didn't want to feel like I felt being out here on the street anymore. And I said, you know, I wonder how many times that's the case, that people end up in a situation like you're saying, where they lose their housing, and then these things that people assume about them are not the cause, but actually the effect of being without a place to live.
I totally agree with that. In fact, I recently had read a study that was done, and the study showed that 98% of the individuals were not substance use disorder. Didn't have a substance use disorder when they went into homelessness. These individuals, like you said, begin to drink to stay warm, or the environment they were around. You know, sometimes pressures of being around people make you do things. And then the depression causes substance use. You know, you can put something in your body and you can feel better. That is actual facts. More so even substance use disorder, though. I really like to talk about that, because I be totally transparent. I'm a person in long-term recovery, and it wasn't like one day I woke up and said I wanted to use drugs. There was many events that led to that situation. So again, getting to know the person because of mental health issues, trauma issues, whatever they may be, leads an individual to use a substance. So substance use disorder is just one of the symptoms. You know, it's a result of something bigger.
Right. And that's like you said, like nobody is saying, you know what, that looks like fun. I think I'll just do that every day. It becomes a coping mechanism for something else that is not getting addressed. And as you said, you know, you had issues, and I think a lot of folks that get involved with helping unsheltered people usually have a background and a story in which they've gone through that themselves, and you have as well.
Exactly. I have a personal story, and even for me, it's deeper than my personal experience out there. So I often think of this, you know, and it's the holiday season, and it's Christmas time, and it's this even season of giving and caring, and it's a reflection season, right? I grew up with a dad who had a heart bigger than I know. You know, every holiday season he went out as Santa Claus. He brought those in orphanages gifts. We had unhoused individuals at our table during the holiday season. So that's where that first part of my doing this work comes from. It's just because it was a part of my household. Then I had an uncle who many have known in our community. There was articles done on him, the shattered life. My uncle Carlos Burgo, and I think of him daily all the time. I remember as a little child, my mom and I going out and seeing the hurt in my mom's eyes as she was trying to help her brother who had mental health and an alcohol problem, who would not receive help from his family. So that's one of the things why I say that, because I often read, well, they have family, their family ain't helping them. Sometimes it's just a person's pride who fell down. They can't receive the help. So for me, that was part of that story. I can say my uncle is doing really well today, but it was many years of that. And then my journey, having a loss of somebody really dear to me and being young and not knowing how to handle that, the environment I was in led me down the road of substance use disorder, which led me to living outside. I remember sleeping on Common Park bench. I remember sleeping in my car until my car got taken away from me. It was something that I can use, but then I didn't have it registered. I didn't have it insured, so it was towed away. I couldn't afford to take my car out of, you know, the tow place. So it was really cold and humbling, and, you know, asking here and there to be able to sleep on somebody's couch. And that's another piece, you know, of being unhoused. It's not recognized if you're on somebody's couch, but you can't move in somebody's house. You know, there's a lot of things. So it's just having your own. It led me to want to be the voice for the unheard, because there's so many people out here that are unheard. There are so many people out here that are judged. There's so much stigma around those that are unhoused. And you hear me keep saying unhoused because just the word homeless just doesn't sound right.
Well, I mean, I learned that because I've gone through bouts of that when I was a kid. Times when my entire family, we lived in a campground, sleeping in a tent, sleeping in a car. And you know, it's some of the family doesn't like to talk about it anymore, but I will talk about it because I think it's an important part of the story. And when it came time for college applications, I was, you know, living, we had a nice house to live in, and my English teacher was my next door neighbor and his son was my best friend. And I asked him to write my letter of recommendation for colleges. And he wrote a line in that stood, you know, remained in my mind, that I may have been without a house, but I was never without a home, because I was always with my family, always had people that cared, always had people that made sure I had something to eat. And I realized, for somebody that didn't have a place to live, which initially was by our own choice, you know, we had to move, and my dad said, we can go to another town or we can camp for the summer until we find something in this town. Mm. And we opted to stay in town because we liked the town. But that was, you know, that's what stood out to me, is you're not homeless if you have people that care about you, people that'll take care of you. And if you can kind of survive with just without the four walls and the roof over your head that is your own.
I like that. And I totally agree. And, you know, I think of the work that I do. I am currently a project director of a project called Project Fear in New Bedford. And I have a team that goes out within the community that does outreach, and individuals come in and we help them find housing. And that's like you said, the work I do, that's my belief, because I want to be that person that gives somebody that feeling of having somebody who cares about them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because family can be family by choice sometimes. And I often hear that just an encounter with us out there, because we meet people where they're at. They don't have to come in the office. I will go sit with you outside and then I'll have a conversation with you. I'll support you. I'll encourage you. I often hear, you know, individuals say, you know, you're more than an outreach worker to me. You're more than an individual that does work. You're more like family to me. So I really like that part, because
sometimes the people's own family don't understand the situation that they're in. You know, we had a woman like that in Wareham who chose to live outdoors. That was the life that she wanted to live. She was happy. The only time that she would get up, you know, get upset with that choice is if it was really cold in the winter and she'd want to go into a hotel room, a motel room for a couple of nights. And her family would not support that. They said, no, if you want to come in permanently, we'll give you a place to live. But if you want to choose to keep going in and out, we're not going to support that. So instead, the community did. Instead, people would come up and be like, here's $100 to get a room for a night or two.
Mm. Yeah. And it's great that the community did that, right? Because I think that's one of the things that I often think about is the expectations of our own that we put on people, right? The conditions,
right.
You know, we often hear that, well, they don't want help. How do you know they don't want help?
They want help, but they just want their version of it. They want to live the life that they want to live.
Exactly. So we're saying you need to do X, Y, and Z. You know, one of the things I hear, well, if they wanted help, they would go get treatment. Well, let's talk about that. I'm an alcoholic. I'm drinking on a daily basis. I may want treatment, but it's hard to get a treatment bed. Or I get that treatment bed, but there's no place for me to go when I leave that treatment bed.
Mm-hmm.
There's no further treatment. Where do I go? I go right back to where I was. What do? I do what's familiar. What happens? You begin to feel hopeless, not hopeful. So I hear that so much, and I read that so much. And that's the piece in me that gets that frustration. And it's like something has to happen. We have to do something different. And that is just listening to a person, just looking past their chapped lips, looking past the image that we see of an individual, and just stopping for a moment and having that conversation and getting to know a person. Because when we're pointing conditions and not knowing their story, we would be telling them to do something that just isn't in the ability to do. So it's, yeah.
And the other thing I would say too is we have to stop looking at them as numbers as well, because, you know, every year the city does the point in time count. And, you know, if you look at the press releases that come as a result of that, you see, well, look, the number of people that are unsheltered is going down. So things must be getting better. But what's going up are the numbers of people that are, you know, couch surfing or living in temporary shelters. And unfortunately, all those numbers across the board are only going to start to go up as people who live paycheck to paycheck are not going to be able to afford the rents that are happening in the city.
I totally agree with you. Just drive by New Bedford and tell me if those numbers have gone down. I think you would agree with me they've gone up. You know, Christmas, winter, you know, you see it more. It's more prevalent, the unhoused, because more so, like you said, in the warmer weather, people can hide better, right? That people go to campgrounds. There's all these places. You see it more in the winter. And when we do this count, because I conduct the point in time count, and you're exactly right, right? We have resources during the winter for those that are cold, right? So when the temperature drops below 30 or 30 below, we're putting people in temporary shelter for an evening. So they're sheltered, but the next day they may be back outside. So we're not looking at that number, but I think that needs are being met in the city of New Bedford, right? We're building more housing, it's there, but the affordability of housing is what we need.
So just to go back to the point in time count then, is that then a false measure to do it at the time of year that they do it? Should it be done twice a year? Should we get a winter count and a summer count? Is it, would that give a more accurate portrayal of what's going on?
I don't think it's a false measure because you can get people better in the winter. My belief is not taking that sheltered count as they're sheltered. Mm-hmm. Because there's more resource for shelter in the winter. So those individuals, when they're actually outside, is what we're looking at. But we're looking at shelter beds. So just look at that point in time account. We had X amount of sheltered. But yet the city of New Bedford has how many shelter beds? Does right. the numbers match?
And with this, you know, the issue of all this housing that's being built, this is being looked at as a cure-all. Like, look, we're getting all of this housing. And I do think, you know, that it is some of it. Because you've got people right now that are living in, you know, a $1,000 a month apartment that can pay $2,000. But they just happen to get a $1,000 a month apartment. Now they get to go move into one of these newer places. And that opens up that $1,000 a month apartment. But does that stay $1,000 a month if everybody around is starting to charge more than that?
I will tell you, don't say $1,000 a month. Just look for an apartment right now. You can't find an apartment for $1,000 a month. Mm-hmm. Again, my personal story was, you know, I lived in a beautiful apartment for 8 years. I had some medical crisis. I had a stroke. So I was out of work. I was receiving PFML, but I still had to go to work because I needed to pay my bills, and PFML doesn't give you enough. Mm-hmm. I, in this process, lost my husband, became a widow. So there was another decrease in my income. And then my landlord comes to me and says, I decided to sell the home. And why? Because people are buying homes right now from people.
And the market was
the market's up, you know, or, you know, I have children who own their own homes. And they're like, I can't believe how much my taxes have gone up, how much my water bill, like the cost of having a home has gone up. So, of course, the landlords are going up and people are going out, such as me. I became unhoused in this journey in the past year for a few months.
And how can we combat this? How do we? So obviously, if the apartments are going to go up in rent, you know, things like rent control have been proposed. Well, I shouldn't say rent control, but rent stabilization has been proposed. Is that a viable method to combat this, or does something else need to take place? And if so, what could that be?
I think more conversation within our community. I think further looking into rent control or whatever one. You know, we're talking about, I don't think that's the solution. I think the solution is more education, more community conversation, more community stakeholders coming together. I don't think it's going to take one thing to solve our problem. So I think we need to begin to come back. And I say, like, I think of old school now, right? We've gone to an era where everybody does things in silos. And we say we have a community that's together, but we're really divided in so many ways. We're too busy pointing fingers at one another instead of coming together and saying, how can we walk alongside each other? How can we help this? How can we talk to that individual out there within our community? Because I believe that the individuals that are in this journey are the ones that can tell us what they need and not us tell them what they need. So I think the solution is education, getting together our landlords, having more community conversation, and then taking it from there, a clear assessment of the individuals, not an outside assessment, an inside assessment of the individuals within our community.
We just have another minute here or so before I got to go to a break and then the news. So, but one of the more controversial topics that has come up has been the idea of potential encampments, of taking all the unsheltered individuals and putting them into, you know, one area and having that be a place where they can all go and live. And that doesn't seem like a viable solution to me because, first of all, who's to say those people even want to be in that situation? And of course, you're also going to get all the pushback from the people that don't want to see that happen.
So I can tell you where I'm the lead street outreach worker in the city of New Bedford, that is a complete fail. The individuals within our community can't even get along with each other, right? You have campgrounds, because I call them campgrounds, throughout the city in New Bedford, and they stay away from each other. There are some that have substance use. There are some that have mental health. They can't live with each other. They're separated. So we would have to have different areas where individuals can leave. You can't just say one area, let's put them all here. They're going to get the resources. We need a building where everybody can come and they can get what they need. They can have a cup of coffee. They can put up their legs. They can talk to our outreach worker. They can do housing applications. There's so much more. But I can say it starts with community conversation. And that's why this Saturday, we're looking at human beings and we're looking at the dignity. And this Saturday, December 21st, is Homeless Memorial Day. So at the steps of New Bedford Library, a few individuals are getting together, remembering those individuals that died throughout this year. There was actually 5 individuals that I clearly knew in the city of New Bedford who died unhoused. And we want to remember those people by having a memorial. So if people want to have further conversation, I will be at downtown New Bedford on the steps of the library from 5 to 6 p.m. And I'll be more than happy to have that conversation. But let's get out and show support to those that are unhoused. That's the beginning of a solution, right? Showing people that we care and they're humans.
Absolutely. And let's make this be an ongoing thing where we can keep having you come back in and continue these conversations.
I would be honored. Thank you.
All right. I've got to take a break here. We'll be back in just a few moments with the news. Stay tuned. And we are going to continue on those conversations with Danielle Brown. We're going to have her come back in the future and we can talk more. And you can call in with your questions in the future as well, because I want to, and we were talking about this during the break, we need to break down some of these stigmas that people have about those who don't have a place to live. And that's really what it is. It's just people without a place to live. And whatever, you know, if somebody has an addiction problem but can pay their rent, you get a majority of people that say, well, you know, that's their business. So we shouldn't be making blanket assumptions about the folks who don't have a place to live. But anyway, we will continue on with those conversations in the future. Right now, though, Phil Devitt is waiting to give you an update on all the top stories of the day. Take it away, Phil Devitt.
Donald Trump says not so fast on a bill to prevent a government shutdown. The accused CEO killer headed back to New York, and a mega jackpot gets bigger.
From the WBSM newsroom, this is WBSM News.
President-elect Donald Trump is opposing the bipartisan funding bill that would prevent a government shutdown. Members of Congress announced Tuesday a deal had been reached to keep the government open until March 14th, but Trump and his running mate J.D. Vance have released a joint statement criticizing the bill, jeopardizing its prospects in the Republican-controlled House. The Dow Jones fell over 1,000 points on Wednesday. At the closing bell, the Dow lost 1,123 points. The S&P 500 lost 178 points. And the NASDAQ fell over 3.5%, dropping 716 points. The Federal Reserve cut interest rates by 0.25% Wednesday, but investors turned sour when they learned the Fed would likely cut rates only twice in 2025. Luigi Mangione is waiving extradition. Reports say he could be transferred from Pennsylvania and be back in New York City by today. He's facing murder and terrorism charges in the killing of UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson. Israel and Hamas may be getting closer to a Gaza ceasefire deal. Reuters reports a Palestinian official said that mediators have narrowed gaps on most of the agreement's clauses. The outlet also reported CIA Director William Burns set to take part in ceasefire talks in Qatar. An agreement that would include the return of hostages held by Hamas in Gaza and Palestinian prisoners held by Israel reportedly could be signed in the coming days. The CDC confirms the first case of severe bird flu in the U.S. The agency said a patient was hospitalized in Louisiana. Data showed the patient was infected with a strain of the virus that was spreading in wild birds and poultry in the country. They were reportedly exposed to sick and dead birds in backyard flocks. And the already massive Mega Millions jackpot is rolling over again. Tuesday night's grand prize went unclaimed, making the next drawing coming up on Friday worth at least $825 million. Lottery officials say it's the largest Mega Millions jackpot that's ever been up for grabs in the month of December. The cash option works out to just over $382 million.
WBSM Sports.
Boston Celtics host the Chicago Bulls tonight at 7:30, and the Bruins visit the Edmonton Oilers tonight at 9.
Now your ABC 6 South Coast forecast.
Clouds clearing, plenty of sunshine today, seasonable with highs in the low to mid 40s. On Friday, we're colder, reaching the mid to upper 30s. Rain and snow showers possible later on Friday. Just a coating expected here on the South Coast. And as for the weekend, we'll barely top freezing temperatures on Saturday, and it will feel very cold all the way into next week. This WBSM News Update is brought to you by Stevie's Wine and Spirits. Look for the purple dot to try before you buy, only at Stevie's Wine and Spirits in Fairhaven. I'm Phil Devitt for WBSM News. Stay up to date with New Bedford's news talk station, WBSM, and get all of our content and breaking news alerts with the WBSM app.
Welcome back. And, you know, it is the holiday season. And when the holidays come around, what do you think about more than, you know, sitting down to have a nice holiday meal? You also think about all those great holiday treats, right? And it wouldn't be the holidays without delicious treats from Dorothy Cox's Chocolates. Who wouldn't love the gift of their famous butter crunch, truffles, fudge, or a classic box of assorted milk or dark chocolates? Dorothy Cox's Chocolates been making the holidays brighter for the South Coast since 1928. And of course, they will continue to do it this year. They've got so many great things over there. Not that I'm pumping there more often than I should. It's okay. You can have a little bit of candy now and then, a little bit of chocolate now and then. And you can certainly get yourself a little bit or a lot for the holidays at Dorothy Cox's Chocolates, either at 21 Burden Way in Fairhaven or 100 Griffin Street in Fall River. You can also order online at dorothycox.com. So if you're listening to us anywhere around the world on the WBSM app, you know you can order it at dorothycox.com. And trust me, you haven't had chocolate until you've had some Dorothy Cox chocolate. Mention Fun 107 or WBSM, and you'll receive a free chocolate-covered pretzel rod. And they want to wish everybody happy holidays. Happy holidays from everyone at Dorothy Cox's Chocolates. Some breaking news here, WPRI reporting. An arrest has been made in a nearly two-decade-old cold case in Westport. A New Bedford man has been arrested. 62-year-old Simeo Farias of New Bedford arrested for the murder of 42-year-old Susanna Alvarado. Her body was found on the side of the road on Route 88 back on October 17th of 2005. She had been beaten and strangled to death. And it says here, an initial investigation did not result in any suspects, but during a complete forensic review in 2020, a biological sample was found on her shirt, and through DNA testing, they were able to determine Farias as the suspect. So he was arrested yesterday and is expected to be arraigned at 2 p.m. today. So there you go, a nearly 20-year-old cold case now apparently been solved. So we'll see, you know, what happens when Simeo Farias goes to trial, but arrested yesterday for the 2005 murder of 42-year-old Susanna Alvarado. I'm going to take a break here to make sure that we stay caught up, and we'll be back in just a few moments. And welcome back in. Say, you know, as you're getting closer to having everybody come over for the holidays, you're going to need something to feed them with, right? That's why you want to stop by the Butcher Shop, 123 Dartmouth Street in New Bedford, because it is a local family-owned business, so they get it. They understand what it's like when family's coming over for the holidays and what it's like to have to feed them. And they've got all kinds of stuff, whether it be a nice featured item. You want to put out a beautiful prime rib for your Christmas dinner. Maybe you need a turkey or a ham. They can help you with all of that. Great, high-quality stuff at affordable prices, but maybe you also just need some snack ideas. Maybe you need some ideas to put out for hors d'oeuvres. They can help you with all of that. They also have great pre-made food that they make every single day. So, well, you know you got a whole bunch of cooking on your plate ahead of you. You can also get yourself a nice, easy lunch or dinner so that you don't have to make something tonight. So stop by the Butcher Shop, 123 Dartmouth Street in New Bedford. See what they have to offer, whether it be helping you with your holiday meal or just giving you a nice meal now. And don't forget, too, you can go down into the beer and wine cellar and stock up on the most important supplies for when the family comes over. So check out the Butcher Shop, 123 Dartmouth Street in New Bedford, and feel the experience of an old school neighborhood market. Family run. Well, they would treat you like family, although they'll treat you better. They won't yell at you like they do at each other. So that's just how they talk. As somebody who comes from a family like that, I get it. Why do you guys always yell? No, that's just how we talk. That's how we talk to each other. Anyway, 508-996-0500. That is my number here. I was talking this morning about this story. Well, a couple of stories that we talked about this morning. One is this big civil complaint filed against CVS Pharmacy from the United States Department of Justice. It's a lawsuit filed against CVS Health accusing the drugstore giant of filling prescriptions for controlled substances that lacked a legitimate medical purpose, according to U.S. Attorney Zachary Cunha. So they're basically saying that CVS made the opioid epidemic worse by filling prescriptions that they really shouldn't have been. And that is information that came from people that were working for CVS, whistleblowers within CVS saying that they had a corporate mandate to fill these prescriptions, while CVS is pushing back on this and saying that each of the prescriptions in question was for an FDA-approved opioid medication prescribed by a practitioner who the government itself licensed, authorized, and empowered to write controlled substance prescriptions. So they're saying, hey, it's not our job to determine if the prescriptions are legitimate. It's the, if they really should have been prescribed, that's on the doctors. So it'll be interesting to see where this goes. 508-996-0500. Let's take a phone call here. Good morning. You're next on WBSM.
Good morning, Spooky. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm okay. Hey, I really liked listening to that lady that you just had on there. What was her name?
Danielle Brown.
Yes. I think she gave a very realistic view of the people that are out there unhoused, as she says. And it'd be nice if you had her on again from time to time to, update people on what's going on. Very realistic approach to the problem.
And that is the plan, to have her come back regularly to be able to update us on the situation and to, because as we have these different conversations that are going on, we'll need that perspective. So absolutely. As different ideas for solutions come up, I'd like to have her come in and talk about how feasible those solutions are.
Absolutely. She sounded really down to earth and someone who experienced the problem herself. And I thought she was a great guest to have on.
Well, thank you. We will definitely have her back.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Have a good day. And I do have to take another break here coming up. But before I go into that break, I'm taking a look at the schedule of things that are planned to happen for Edaville. And right now, tonight, they have a very special event that's going to be going on, and it's the last one of the season, the last North Pole Limited. The trains will depart at 5 and 6:30 tonight, and you get to journey to the North Pole on their vintage steam train, and you get to meet Santa Claus. They will have hot chocolate and cookies while the elves make it a memorable trip for you and your family and to prove that there really is a Santa Claus. And when you get to their North Pole, Santa will board the train and greet each child with a special gift. Now, this is just the train. They also have the regular Edaville experience tonight as well, the Festival of Lights, where you can ride the vintage amusement park rides and you can walk around the park and shop in the Christmas Village. But it's the last North Pole Limited of the season before Christmas, so you can jump on that if you'd like to. Or you can just get your regular tickets, which start at just $12.95 to experience all the magic of Edaville, all of the lights of Edaville. Start at just $12.95. You can get your tickets now at Edaville.com and make sure you get them quickly because those trains are going to fill up tonight, and especially as we get closer to Christmas. They'll be operating every day until Christmas. They're off Christmas Day, and then they will operate every day for the remainder of the year. So again, you can get your tickets now at Edaville.com. Don't miss out on your chance, and I think I'm going to get out there, not this weekend, but next weekend. After some of the, you know, the Christmas spirit is already in me, then I'll go and experience some Festival of Lights before it wraps up for the season. I love Edaville. All right, we'll be back after a quick break. All right, we are just about out of time for this morning. Stay tuned for Chris McCarthy and South Coast Now. But before I do, it's been a rough morning. I'm going to go over to Stevie's later on today before I head over to bowling. And if you are looking for a great gift to give somebody, Stevie's Wine and Spirits is the place to go, because not only can you get, you know, a bottle of something that you want to give to somebody that you know enjoys, say, a bourbon or a scotch or a bottle of wine, you can get great things there that you won't find anywhere else, but you can also get gift cards so that they can go and pick it out. And give them the gift card and explain to them that when you go to Stevie's, they have the purple dot, so you can try before you buy. So anything that has the purple dot, they can sample before they use that gift card. Or if they want to go to some of the great tastings that they have every month. Or maybe they want to use that gift card to sign up for the Rackhouse Club, where they get, for $50 a month, they get a different bottle that's worth at least that every month of a bourbon or a whiskey or a rye. So many great things at Stevie's Wine and Spirits. You've got to go in there and try it out for yourself and then give the gift of Stevie's to someone else in your life. Check them out. 115 Huddleston Avenue in Fairhaven. And not only can you get those gift certificates, you can also get wine gift bags, and they have these great ornaments that they're selling as well. All the money from those ornaments goes to benefit the Fairhaven Veterans Center. So you can do good while doing your holiday shopping. Stevie's Wine and Spirits, 115 Huddleston Avenue in Fairhaven. That's going to do it for me for today. I did just get a response from the police regarding the shooting that happened at Taco Bell, the shots fired incident. Well, actually, it was a shooting because there was a male victim who was located with non-life-threatening injuries, and detectives are now investigating. So that's what we can tell you right now, the information that we have now, and we'll get that up at WBSM.com coming up shortly. I hope everybody out there has a great day, and check out WBSM.com. We've got lots of great content there, not just hard news, but also other interesting stories that you want to read, including a great story from Barry today. You might not be aware of this, but the first ever department store Santa Claus anywhere –